This is the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading Chicago. First off, stock fertilizer. Josh Linville, Vice President of Fertilizer with StoneX. What crops he most concerned about?
So I'm not going to act like I'm a grain guy. I parrot what smarter people around me say. Like, I sit fairly close to Arlen Suderman. I think the world of the man, he has forgotten more about grain than I could ever hope to know. But when I sit there and I think about, okay, who is in good shape? Who is in bad shape in terms of supply? This does not mean price, right? A massive difference between affordability and availability. But I think North America, for the most part, is in decent shape. It can turn bad very quickly. But I think for right now, it's sitting in good shape with what's already in place or coming. Where I start to get worried is more of like Eastern Europe. I start to get worried about Australia. Now, if this thing goes on long enough, now we need to start talking about South America, but that's a little ways down the road. But when I look at those markets that are kind of up and coming, the thing that really worries me is the wheat market.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Our guest today is Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago. Bob, let's start with the row crops. Interesting day of trade, but kind of quiet.
Yeah, out of the gate for this week, after the holiday shortened week last week, we're seeing, I don't know, a little bit better prices in soybeans and corn and a little bit softer in the wheat futures. Really, the drivers in these markets, if we can take them one by one here for the corn market, you know, on the export side of the equation, that still remains supportive. Export sales were within trade expectations and still running slightly ahead of USDA's pace, so that's good. Ethanol margins are strong, considered favorable. That's a bullish element for the corn market. Dryness is still part of the broader backdrop. Drought or moisture deficits remain a concern across a big chunk of the U.S. crop areas. So if that doesn't get alleviated in some consistent fashion, that'll be something that's on top of traders' minds. Really working against the corn market is the early planting weather. That could be a near-term headwind. Much of the Midwest is expected to trend warmer over the next couple weeks, which could allow an early planting start. So the sooner that crop gets planted, typically the better off it is by the end of the season. Obviously, it's a long window of weather that we have to deal with, but at least that's the psychology at the onset. For soybeans, a bit of push and pull here. For the bean oil side of the equation, it's getting support from the energy and the vegetable oil markets. That's strong. We see the prices today in bean oil making some headways here, up around 70, 80 points or so. Managed money also, with that as a cue, has been adding to their bullish positions, so the big spec funds are in there with the palms in buying. On the negative side, U.S. soybean export sales remained under their normal pace. Cumulative soybean sales are still below the five-year average, so that's a mildly bearish demand signal. We'll see how that plays out. And then on the more neutral side, and this will be more of a headline thing, Iran conflict, that remains the main outside market driver. I mean, obviously, its impacts on the energy markets are going to work its way into the bean oil equation. So that is a driver in that market that is creating some uncertainty. Argentina, their weather could threaten the crop quality. They've had some flooding concerns in parts of the Pampas, and that's being watched. So that excess of moisture could hurt quality and maybe support the prices. And then in terms of the bean oil soy meal crush factor, crush margins are very strong, which obviously is going to be encouraging processing, but that could also raise the risk of excess meal production. So what are we going to do with all this meal that's going to come about from the crushing that's occurring in large part due to just the vegetable oil markets being strong around the world, but also getting that huge catalyst out of energy prices. So that's going to be something that we need to keep an eye on there too. In terms of wheat, well, the U.S. plains weather, that remains front and center. Good rains fell in parts of Oklahoma and Texas over the weekend. Another system, I believe, is expected later this week that could benefit some additional portions of Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas. So keep an eye on that. Although drought is still an underlying concern. So you've got this foundation of the concern for drought, but that's being chipped away by Mother Nature providing some precipitation. as I just mentioned. So we'll see how that looks. And one way we're going to look at is through crop rating. So those are going to be back in focus. The first nationwide winter wheat condition update since last fall is going to be due. So we'll see how that actually comes out. That's going to keep the attention on conditions and confirm whether there's production stress or whether we're going to show some stabilization. Geopolitics remain an outside influence. Obviously, you've got the Strait of Hormuz developments. That's still affecting broader commodity sentiment through energy, through freight, input cost uncertainty. So obviously, that's a factor that we're going to keep an eye on. And I guess more negative side of the equation is global export competition still remains heavy. Russia's March wheat exports were revised higher and remain very large, and that's a bearish factor for the worldwide supply equation. And European wheat conditions are relatively stable. So net on the supply side, in terms of elsewhere beyond the United States borders, things are looking like they're ample. So net for corn, it's kind of caught between support demand and outside market risk premium. You've got potentially improving planting conditions. Export demand and ethanol usage are constructive. We've got the Brazil weather to keep an eye on as a variable that could be bullish if it doesn't turn out friendly there. Iran-related fertilizer and energy disruptions. And then in terms of soybeans, support is coming from, again, the Iran-related energy risk, firm crush economics and fund participation. And I guess working against that, like I mentioned earlier, is the sluggish soybean export pace and heavy soy meal production. And then for wheat, really, it's a tug of war between improving the U.S. weather and still existing drought stress. We've had some fund buying, which has been on the positive side for prices. It's been some uncertainty around U.S. crop ratings, like I mentioned, and we'll see what the first reports start to look like. Against that, you've got the heavy Russian exports and generally stable foreign crop conditions. So that's what we're working with right now. In terms of prices, I mean, we're holding up fairly decently for the soft red winter wheat contract in Chicago. It's still up in the top third of its range. So we're basically between about, say, 590-ish to about 634, trading around 606-ish towards the close today. In terms of the old crop corn futures, the May delivery, prices have basically been between, say, about 450 and about 475 a bushel, and we're sitting around 453, so relatively stable in the top half of the range. And then for soybeans, similarly, for the old crop May futures, really tight range. Over the last 2-3 weeks or so, we've been stuck really between about 1150 and 1180, so a real tight 30-cent range after seeing some pretty significant swings heading into this little quiet period right now. So at some point, I think the market's going to be given some kind of catalyst to break out of there. I'm not going to flip a coin and tell you which way it's going to go. We'll just have to see what kind of headlines come along and what kind of fundamentals really start to create a story that's going to either indicate higher prices are justified or we break on down to the downside.
Bob Mowers with Manduca Trading in Chicago. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Our guest today, Bob Mauer, Manduca Trading, Chicago. Bob, let's talk livestock.
Yeah, a bit of strength here in both the cattle and the beef markets today. General story, in my opinion, for the cattle market is that we're coming into this week after having a last week that the cash cattle trade sharply higher. So northern trade was somewhere between 240 and 245, dressed around 380 to 385, with the southern trade around 245. So strong cash action, that's been a bullish driver, and I think that momentum is helping us start stronger this week. Futures momentum, like I said, remains very strong. Fund buying continues to support the market, and the beef supplies in general, with the weekly slaughter running below year-ago levels, and the beef production that continues to trail last year. So just in terms of the supply side of the equation for beef, obviously that's going to lean towards the bullish side of the equation. Demand for beef remains resilient. We're not too far from the seasonal uptick that we would typically see. I mean, we're in the beginning of April, so hopefully things start turning warmer more consistently, which would be great. And then also JBS workers, they're returning to their positions there at Greeley, so that removes one uncertainty from the market. Working a bit against cattle prices, beef, box beef, that kind of softened late in the week. So we need to keep an eye on those prices, make sure they're sustainable, make sure that the output is going to turn a profit for the packers. The market is watching whether the futures premiums can continue to be justified. And just technically speaking, we start seeing the blurbs out there about the market being overbought. Although in my long history in these markets, markets can stay overbought or oversold for quite some time before there's any kind of reaction. So we'll just see how that plays out. Neutral side of the equation for the beef market. Carcass weights are heavy, but really everybody knows that, and it just has not been enough to offset the tight numbers. And then the export sales were decent, but not a major driver, but we'll take the decent part. So basically the summary, stronger cash trade, tighter beef supplies, continued fund buying, working on the bull side of the equation, something we'll keep an eye on over the near term here, working against that a bit would be the softer box beef and maybe, you know, technicians saying that this market looks a little overdone to the upside. Over in hogs, working on the bull side of the equation, maybe helping to come off those recent swing lows is the U.S. export demand. That's been a decent, move. Summer demand expectations around the corner. The market's still sitting near an important technical support here, like I mentioned earlier, or just a bit ago. You know, we're sitting at the low end of the range here, and the market was able to sustain some kind of bullish move off of those recent swing lows in prices that we saw about a month ago or so. Pork cutout values showed some improvement. Packer margins have improved. That's working again, working for the market. And then working against it a bit is production remains large. The spec funds have been trimming their long positions, so a bit of lack of conviction, let's put it that way, or some profit taking up here maybe. Cash hog prices and the lean hog index have been a bit on the softer side. And then China continues warning about hog oversupply. So if they want to eradicate some of their oversupply, it might hit its way, work its way into the world market, which would provide competition for us. So we'll see how that all plays out. But net-net, really, again, for hogs, you got the strong export demand, improving pork values, again, the prospect of summer seasonal strength. Working against that a bit has been the softer cash hog prices, large production, the reduced fund length, and then, like I said, ongoing concern about potential Chinese oversupply. So a number of factors. Market did hold up technically, in my opinion. The June lean hog futures shook off that recent test of the 104 area. We're sitting about 107.70, so it's showing some technical strength at the moment.
Bob Maurer with Manduca Trading on the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Guest today, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading, Chicago. Bob, let's get contact information.
Yeah, you pick up the phone, give me a call. Number is 312-987-2053. If I can't get to the phone, I'm likely chatting with a customer, so just leave a message real quick, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Otherwise, you can reach me via email at bmaurer@manducatrading.com. That's B-M-A-U-R-E-R @manducatrading.com. Or come visit the website at www.myfuturesadvisor.com.
Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading on the Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Brad Lubin is a University of Nebraska ag economist on CRP.
It didn't specifically reduce the cap to drive the CRP to lower levels, and the CRP enrollment was falling. Well, if the CRP enrollment's falling, that is less dollars spent than what was originally budgeted, and reducing the cap allowed one to capture the budget savings accordingly. If the cap would have remained the same, then there technically wouldn't have been budget savings, even though we were spending less. The 8 farm bill and the 14 farm bill effectively captured that budget savings. Then it was the 18 farm bill that actually reversed course and started to increase the overall cap in the CRP. And that's where we remain today, with some interest to try and increase it further, some interest to potentially adjust some payment rates, but mostly about keeping the CRP largely as it exists.
It's the Agribusiness Report.